Welcome back to the Just for Today podcast, where we dive deep into uncomfortable topics with no filters. My name's Adriana, and today I have a very special guest with me. This is Connor. Hi.
Hi.
Connor is Eric's best friend, and if you guys remember the story I told on the first episode about him moving in next door with his best friend, roommate, and they crashed my party, and then we all became besties that summer. This is him.
That was me.
All right, so do you want to introduce yourself and let us know what you want us to know?
Yeah, my name's Connor. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I was best friends with Eric for about 12 years. I'm just over a year sober, so in the recovery community, working on recovery.
Thank you for sharing that. Now I'm going to dive into some questions I have for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So can you share a little bit about your friendship with Eric and how you guys met?
Yes. I met Eric in 2007, 2008, New Year's Eve. I was at a New Year's Eve party with my friend. We were younger, so we were in 7th grade or 8th grade. Mm-hmm. And Eric was, I think he was either a freshman or a sophomore. So my friend had an older sister, and she was having a New Year's Eve party. Like, parents were gone, stuff
party
like that.
Party.
And so we stayed there and partied with all the high school kids. Mm-hmm. And Eric came. He was best friends with my other best friend, Gary Crosby. Mm-hmm. And they came with, like, their group of friends, and that was the first time I met them. And it was, like, cool, you know, being, like, a little kid partying with all the high schoolers.
Yeah.
And then from, like, that day after, like, I always wanted to hang out with them. I thought they were the coolest. They already could drive, you know.
I would
text them, have them pick me up, drive me around. So that's how I started hanging out with him. But we didn't become, like, best friends till down the road.
Till later on.
Yeah, later on.
All right, what's your favorite memory with Eric?
My favorite memory with Eric would definitely be playing hockey with him. So we'd been hanging out every day for a long time. We worked together. After I got out of high school, we started working together. My friend Gary had a moving company. Me and Eric would always work together. We were like the team. So we hung out every single day together working, then would hang out every night together and at points live together. But he had gone to rehab in 2016, and I had just gotten out of jail. Mm-hmm. So we were both kind of, you know, like, at low points, I guess, like, fresh start
trying
again.
Trying to start, yeah. Fresh.
And so he was like, man, I gotta stay. So, and I said, I'll do anything with you to get you to stay sober. Like, you know, you can live with me. So he moved into my apartment. We had a one-bedroom apartment. He slept on the couch, put a dresser in the living room. Mm-hmm. And I started taking him to hockey. And we went to hockey every single day. Like, every single open hockey, stick time, we went.
Yeah.
And we would even, even if we had jobs during stick time, we would, like, find a way to, like, cancel a moving job. We'd be like, oh, we'd send our friend Big Mike. We'd be like, rest in peace, Big Mike. We'd send him and be like, yeah, can you just go handle this for us? We'll be a little late, you know, when we go to hockey first, just do it. And he loved hockey right away. So
yeah. That
was definitely my favorite memory is, like, how quick he picked up hockey and how much he loved it right away. Because I loved hockey. I played hockey my whole life.
Yeah.
And so that was, like, a good hobby we could have together.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, drinking or drugging, we could go play hockey.
Yeah.
And we stayed sober I wasn't really sober. I was drinking still. But he did not use heroin because of hockey for, I think that was his longest stretch of sobriety, like, six years.
It was...
I mean, that even led into when he met you and everything.
Yeah, and then he relapsed, like, a couple years after we got together. So, yeah, that was his longest, that I know of.
Yeah, and he even said, like, I got a hobby and that helps a lot.
Oh, he said hockey saved his life.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so once he got into hockey, I knew it was good for him. And he was, like, naturally good at it.
Yeah.
Like, I had been playing hockey since I was 3 years old is when I started skating. Within a year of Eric playing hockey, me and him were on the same team.
Yeah.
And we could, like, play together, pass, and, like, just have fun. And so I think that was definitely my favorite memory with him.
Yeah, he was definitely, like, good at, whatever he tried to do.
Yeah, he was naturally, Eric was naturally like, good, so at, good everything. At everything.
I remember I'd like ask him to do anything or even like handyman work or anything. And he'd be like, no, but I can like YouTube it. And like, he just got it. Like, he just got everything so fast.
Yeah, he was naturally good at everything.
But I know hockey was really important to him too, because his dad was a really big hockey player. And he lost his dad also at a really young age. But he always, I feel like, felt a little more connected to his dad by playing hockey.
Yeah. He had the same number as his dad. He chose the same number when we got on a team together.
Yeah.
And that, when he started playing hockey, actually, is when he started talking about his dad more.
Yeah.
Because before that, throughout our friendship leading up to hockey, he didn't really mention his dad much. And then when we started playing hockey, I noticed he would start talking about his dad more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd say that in the beginning, you didn't know that his dad was dead, right? Like, you thought his stepdad was his actual dad?
Really early on, yeah. So when I was still in high school, and we'd, like, go over to his house and stuff, like, in the early stages of our friendship, I did not know that his dad was dead.
Yeah.
I would always see, there was always a guy on the couch every time we go there, and I just figured that was his dad.
Yeah.
And he never said anything. Yeah. He never said anything until after I got out of high school, probably 2 years of being his friend, I finally found out that his dad was dead.
Yeah, he opened up about it. Yeah, it wasn't really something he would just kind of say.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I will say it was cool to watch you guys play hockey and just to see the connection you guys had and honestly, the happiness. Like, it was just, it really is good memories. Like,
yeah.
We would all go watch your games, and, like, when my parents were in town or my cousins, like, he would literally ask everybody, like, are you going to go watch our games?
Yeah.
It was just a men's adult hockey league. But he took it so seriously. He was like, who's coming to my hockey game? He'd, like, text everyone and be like, you're coming, right? Like, everybody, oh, my gosh.
He loved it,
It was fun. That was, I can say, probably one of his favorite memories, too.
Yeah.
So how would you say addiction affected your friendship?
Addiction played a huge role in our friendship throughout our whole friendship. I mean, that's pretty much how I met him, was at a party. That was when I was in seventh grade. That was the night I had my first shot of alcohol, and that's what I thought
was... At that party?
Yeah, at that party. I was 12 or 13, and that was when I had my first shot of alcohol. I think that was when I first smoked weed that same night. And so that's, like, what I was drawn to the older kids by.
Mm-hmm.
Like, throughout high school, I didn't really hang out with kids my age. All my friends were out of high school.
Yeah. Because Eric was 2 years ahead of you?
Or? Eric was so he was a senior when I was a freshman. So we were only in school together 1 year.
Oh, okay.
And so I would say addiction, as I got older, I started getting heavy in alcohol. I never tried, like, hard drugs or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, our friendship was, for a long time, alcohol.
Yeah.
Like, always. Hey, let's go out and party now. Let's go to, you know, Mill Ab tonight and, you know, get drunk. And
yeah.
So we would drink a lot throughout our friendship. And I always, like, gauge my, like, once it started becoming an addiction, alcohol, I always, like, thought my addiction wasn't as bad as his because, you know, I'm not putting a needle in my arm like heroin. That's terrible.
Yeah.
But as I got older, and Eric would say, you know, your addiction's no better than mine.
Yep.
And I started thinking about it, and, like, times I would get sick from withdrawing, it was just as bad.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a full-blown alcoholic and full-blown heroin addict, you're the same person.
Yeah.
And so...
Just a different type of drug.
Yeah, just different drug. Yeah. And so... I would say Eric drank more because of me, because I would openly drink and, like, working and stuff in the moving industry, we would drink all day.
Yeah.
We would go on, we'd start at 7 in the morning, stop at Walgreens, get shots. By noon, we'd go get more.
Yeah.
So that was definitely, addiction was a big part of our friendship. Like, using alcohol and using drugs throughout our friendship,
Yeah. When you met Eric, when you were 12 or 13 or whatever age you were, was he already an addict?
I don't think he was already an addict, no.
Just drinking?
He was like a big pothead.
Okay.
Like, he would drink at parties, like, on the weekends and stuff, like Friday, Saturday night, you know. But he was mainly, like, a big pothead. Like, Eric, if you needed weed, Eric was the guy to call. Like, you get picked up by Eric in his old Dodge Durango. He had a big bong in the front seat. Yeah. You know, Eric was just kind of like the stoner kid.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He was not like a drug addict when I first met him, no.
Right, that happened later on.
That happened later, after high school.
Would you say that weed is a gateway drug?
I think it's a gateway drug if you already are an addict and you don't know it.
Right. Like, so if you have the addictive gene.
If you have the addictive gene, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I would think that because it alters your mind.
And especially the younger you are when you use it, when you first start, is like the more it alters like the brain chemistry.
Yeah, anything that alters your mind, I think, is a gateway drug because you want that feeling. It's not so much the drug, it's the feeling.
Yeah.
So for me, like being 12 years old and smoking weed, I loved the way it changed my, my mind.
Yeah.
And so that's what led me to, alcohol and wanting more.
What else? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I feel like me and Eric talked about that a lot, too, because you always hear people saying, like, weed's not a gateway drug. It's, it's just weed. But he also said that it was a gateway drug. Same thing. If you have, the addictive gene, then it is a gateway drug.
I think so.
And for those who don't have it, I feel like I smoked weed when I was in high school, and I could just stop. Same with alcohol. I can drink but just stop when I want to, and I think that's one of the things that people don't understand about addicts, and that's why they blame addicts, and you hear it all the time, if they didn't want to, they wouldn't. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. You don't wake up and you're like, I want to get fucked up today and I want to drink. Like, you're fighting yourself in your mind.
So for me, with weed, right away at 12 years old, I would wake up in the morning, smoke weed before I went to school. I would sometimes ditch class to smoke weed. So it's already addictive. Just because it's not a drug that you can get withdrawals from or stuff like that, or physically dependent on.
Yeah.
You still can get addicted to it, and it leads you into addiction, I think. So it's definitely a gateway drug in my opinion.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you. Can you walk us through your journey with addiction? I know you said you started at that party, but is there a reason, or do you know why? Were you trying to hide something? Were you trying to fix something? What is the reason behind your addiction?
So I've still tried to figure that out. I talk to my sister about that a lot, childhood traumas and stuff like that.
What was your childhood like?
So, we moved here from Iowa when I was 3.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a Navy pilot, and he went to law school after the Navy in Iowa. And then when we moved here, he got a job as an attorney here in Arizona. And shortly after we moved here, my parents divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So, they got divorced when I was 4 or 5. So, I don't really ever remember my parents being together.
Mm-hmm.
And, throughout my childhood, I'd go back and forth to my mom and my dad's house, and my mom would always bash my dad, he's such a bad person, he's a piece of shit, and I didn't think that.
Yeah.
My dad was he's my hero, he's my best friend.
Yeah.
I look up to my dad so much, so I think when you're young like that, that confuses you.
Yeah.
And it was chaotic going back and forth between two completely different households.
Yeah. And so they're not getting along, and...
Yeah, they never got along.
You and your sister are kind of put in the middle of it.
Yeah.
As children.
Yes.
You should not.
My sister took care of me a lot growing up.
Yeah.
When we were at my mom's house for a long period of years, when we would go to my mom's, my sister pretty much raised me, I think.
Yeah.
For, how young she was, she would drive me everywhere. She would be the one to make sure my homework was done, make sure I had dinner, make sure I went to bed. My sister did all those things.
Yeah. How much older is she than you?
She's 5 years older.
5 years older.
Yeah.
Oh. Thank God for Tay-Tay. We love her.
Thank God for Tay-Tay. Aunt Tay-Tay.
I think that also is a part of, when trauma like that happens and you're the oldest child, you feel the need to have to step up and take care, Emmy, for example.
Yeah.
She's always had that personality, but right after Eric died, I feel like she grew up so much, and she's just, like, way too mature for her age, always worried about her siblings.
You can see that.
And, like, wanting to take care of people. So I feel like that's kind of just a trauma response in older siblings.
Yeah.
And, like, stuff like that happens.
Our kids are the same age, Carson and Emmy.
Yeah.
And Emmy is, like, so much more mature. I tell Celeste all the time, she's, like, a 20-year-old.
Yeah. She's very, very mature.
Yeah. Very mature for
me. Oh my gosh, that girl. But, and it makes me feel bad, you know, because, like, sometimes I feel like
she's missing out on her childhood.
She is, yeah. She's, like, missing out on her childhood, and I feel like, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it now. Like, that's just, like, I can't take it away. You know, like, trauma just, that's how it is. But, yeah, it's sad. It's sad to think about it. So you think, like, childhood trauma played a big role in that?
In my addiction?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Still trying to figure it out to this day, like, what exactly.
Yeah.
But I think I had a lot of traumas growing up that I'm not even sure of.
Yeah.
That is a big part of why I became an addict.
Yeah. I feel like we also block out a lot of trauma. Like, we don't remember certain things that happened to us when we were younger. And, yeah, trauma makes you just kind of forget things. Have you been to therapy?
I have not, no.
Are you willing to go to therapy?
I might check it out.
What? Why are you against it? What is it about it?
I'm not against it. I mean, I went to a place to, like, get into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there, did, like, the intake and everything, and then they never called me back. So it's like, not even therapy wants me?
So,
like,
so you're just like,
and
it's
so
not
I just never called
me.
Them, yeah. That was, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I went there. My mom had me go there, went in, did the whole process, and then they just never called me back. I was like...
So you gave up.
I'm too messed up
for
therapy,
like,
I guess.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a stigma around men in therapy?
No, I don't think so.
So it's not, like, embarrassment or anything like that, like, needing help or...
No, I don't
getting
think so.
Help. Okay.
No.
Okay. That's good. That's good to know.
No, I don't think that.
So when would you say was your rock bottom?
Rock bottoms. I've had quite a few rock bottoms, I would think.
Have you?
And just when I think I hit rock bottom, it's like, nope, there's another rock down there.
A little deeper, yeah.
Yeah. I would say definitely my motorcycle accident.
Mm-hmm.
Waking up in the hospital, my dad said when I woke up, he said the first thing I said was, did I kill anybody? And it's like, that's kind of rock bottom. I mean, for months, I was just stuck.
Yeah.
Couldn't walk. Had to have help going to the bathroom, showering. Had a tube in my throat. So it's like, just sitting there and reflecting every day at my dad's house on the couch for months.
Yeah.
Of, like, how I'm in this situation, how I can't even get up to walk.
Yeah.
And knowing it's because of alcohol, that was definitely a rock bottom. And then another rock bottom, I would say, was going to prison.
Yeah.
That was really hard. The day I went to go to prison, I had to wake up and take my son to school, and it was just silent the whole way to school. Like, silent.
Because he knew, right?
He knew something was wrong. I told him a few weeks before, but I didn't tell him, like, that day.
Okay.
Because I could see, like, how telling him kind of affected him.
Yeah.
And then the day I had to go, I just told him, your mom's picking you up from school.
Yeah.
And I knew that I didn't know when I was going to see him again because his mom was looking for any chance to just kidnap him.
Yeah.
And so when I dropped him off at school, I just cried out in front of the gate there, and he walked away, and he knew something was wrong. He waved. He was just turned around waving to me the entire time.
Yeah.
Until he turned the corner.
Yeah.
And he knew something was wrong.
Yeah. Kids are smart.
Yeah,
they
he was smart.
Sense all that stuff.
That morning when he woke up, he just kept repeating, I love you, Dad. I love you, Dad. I was like, and I just knew his mom was going to do anything to try to kidnap him and ruin that relationship.
Yeah. And then just knowing you're in there and you can't
do anything about it. Yeah. Can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Have no control over what happens out here.
Yeah. I remember, so you went to prison a lot.
Last year. Well, over a year ago now.
Over a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was in February of 2024.
January 31st, 2024.
Okay.
That's when I turned myself in, yeah.
Okay, yeah, and I remember, so that was what, like 10 months after Eric died. I remember you calling me when I was at my parents' house, and you called me crying because you had just left court and you found out you were going to go to prison. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that day too.
You were a little suicidal.
Think so, yeah, maybe.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And you said you were drunk, so I don't know if you remember exactly what you said, but, you know, you're talking to me and you're, like, basically telling me that you're going to kill yourself, you're going to do this and that, and, you know, there's no reason to live anymore because you're going to go to prison, Carson's going to be taken away by his mom, and you're never going to see him again. So, like, what's my point of living? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's probably what I thought at the time.
Yeah. Do you remember what I said back to you?
No.
I said, your child is so lucky to have a dad, even if he's in prison, and my kids don't get that.
Yeah, I remember.
They can't. And I think when I said that, you started crying, and you were like, I every time I'd talk to you, you'd like bring that up and be like, I can't, like, I can't kill myself. You're right. Like, you know, at least till he'll, like, he could still talk to me on the phone or do this or that and all this stuff. And I mean, obviously I've never been through your situation. Like, I haven't had to be away from my kids or have my kids taken away, but I can only imagine how, like, especially when they are your whole life, you know, you're like, why am I living? Like, what am I good for anymore? So, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're like going through that situation, but I'm glad you did.
I'm glad you made too. It. Yeah. Cause me and my son have the best father-son relationship. Yeah, he's my whole world.
He's obsessed with you.
Yes. And to know that I was going to be in a place where I couldn't control it and his mom would have taken any chance to ruin that relationship.
Yep.
That felt like the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm glad we had that talk, like, and I snapped out of it.
Yeah. And it is scary.
And it worked out for the best.
At that time, you didn't know when you'd see him again, if you'd see him again, like, all this stuff. So, obviously, looking back, it's different because you know you have him now. But, yeah, that was scary. But he's so cute. Like, he's so obsessed with him. He'll come over, and, like, Connor will be sitting on the couch, and Carson will come in, like, every 5 minutes. He'll be like, I love you, Dad.
Yeah, just come check on me.
Hi, Dad.
Just
what
come
are you
check
doing?
Hey, Dad. What are you doing? I love you. I missed you. I missed you the 5 minutes I was outside.
You. That's what he says all the time. He's like, I miss you, Dad.
He's scared that he'll be put in that situation again, probably. He tells me he misses me when
you're
right
there.
From school. Yeah.
I know. That's so sad. Poor kid.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's hard. And I feel like it's at that age, too, for him, like, his little brain doesn't understand it, you know? Like, he's probably saying those things because, like you said, he's scared that he's not going to see you for a while, but he probably doesn't know that's why he's saying those things.
Yeah.
Like, same with, like, kids, like my kids, they say certain things, and I feel like they say it because their dad's dead, but they don't realize that's why they're saying it. Like, it's just not, like, normal things.
Like, a few months ago, my grandma died, and so we went to New York for her funeral just for 3 days, and I left him with Celeste, and he was calling me, like, every 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, probably terrified that I wasn't coming back again.
Yeah.
Because, like, his mom took him for 9 months.
Yeah.
And so he would call me every hour, hi, Dad, when are you coming home? And, like, count down. Like, how many hours?
Yeah. And probably, like, when she took him from you, like, you weren't even allowed to talk to him, right? You didn't talk to him at all.
The only time I talked to him 3 times while I was in prison, and every time is either when Celeste, my fiance, had him, or my dad, because his mom cut off all communication.
Right, so when she took him, there was no communication.
Yeah, so my dad gave her, like, everything to sign up for phone calls.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, he can just, you know, call me.
It's not, like, understanding how prison
not
works.
Not understanding that you have to be approved for phones, and you have to, like,
you're not on vacation.
Yeah, you have to be, like, approved. There's, like, background checks and stuff. And so she's like, well, he never calls me. It's like, so she never signed up for visits, phone calls, nothing. So I talked to him 3 times in the 4.5 months I was in there.
Yeah, and I'm sure he asked about you every single day. So now he's like,
and it's not like they had the greatest relationship.
Yeah.
When, I mean, she gave away a lot of her parenting time. She sleeps a lot while she's watching him.
Yeah. And so, he says these things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he says these things.
Sad.
And so he's probably wondering, like, where's the person that takes care of me?
Yeah. Yeah, just trauma every time you leave. He's like, is my dad coming back?
Yeah, when I was in New York and he would call, he had some meltdowns. Yeah. Like,
that's how Emmy is, too. Like, every time, like, we'd take my parents to the airport, in the beginning, she would, like, cry. And I'd ask her why she was crying. And she'd be like, well, it's because Dad said he'd see me tomorrow, but, like, he never came back. And, like, Grandma and Papa are saying they'll see me in, like, 2 weeks, but what if they don't? You know, like, they're just
fucked. I remember you saying, like, when you tell her you have to go to work,
yeah,
she would freak out.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened to Eric. He went to work and never came back.
Yeah. Well, that, I think it was the next week. It was like 2 weeks after Eric died. I had to, because I was living with my parents in California, and I had to fly back out here to pick up his ashes. And I didn't tell her, like,
yeah,
like that he was being cremated or that I'm coming to, like, pick him up. So that's when she was like, where are you going? And I was like, I'm going to go to work, but I'll see you, like, in a couple days. And she lost her shit. She was like, you cannot go to work.
Don't, like work's bad, right?
You cannot go to work. You're going to die. Like, you're not going to come back. And I was like, oh my God, like, why didn't I think
about that? It's so sad because kids just don't understand.
They don't understand. And, like, for the longest time after that, too, everywhere we would go, she'd be like, is that person working? Is that their job? Is that this? Like, we'd go to the grocery store and they'd be like, are they working? Like, is that work? And every tiny little thing. And I'm like, poor girl, she probably just thinks, like, work is a bad thing. Like, you go to work and then you die and you don't come back.
She's gonna be like, I don't ever want to work, Mom.
It's a good excuse.
I'm never working.
Yeah, never working a day in my life.
Look what happened to my dad when he worked.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I feel like her little brain was trying to process. So she would ask me all the time, like, people working on the street, like, everywhere. She'd be like, so that's work. That person's working. I'm like, yeah, that person's working. They're gonna go home, you know, like, it's...
It's okay.
It's okay. It doesn't happen to everyone. But yeah, poor girl. Poor kids. So what would you say motivated you to seek recovery?
Definitely my motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
So knowing that it's gotten so bad that I almost, like, lost my leg.
Well, you almost died.
Almost died.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was dead at the hospital, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, almost dying was definitely...
I remember we got the phone call, and they, like, basically told Eric, you're dying. Like, you don't have much longer.
So knowing that I could have died because of alcohol and left a 2-year-old son behind.
Yeah.
And, I mean, imagine if that happened. Like, we already talked a little bit about his mom. If he was left with her, he'd have, like, no chance.
Yeah.
He would never go to school.
Yeah.
He would never have a normal life.
Yeah.
And so knowing that a decision that I made because of alcohol could have ruined his life too. That's what really was like, okay, I need to reevaluate some things here.
Need to get my shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just a selfish decision like that could affect everyone else's life.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. What's the hardest part of staying sober?
The hardest part is just, like, environment, especially with my drug of choice, alcohol. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And, like, our family, you're my cousin-in-law. So, like, when we go to
He's marrying my cousin. Him and my cousin are engaged.
Eric hooked it up.
And she's pregnant. They're having a little boy.
We are. June 6th.
He's a little Eric Jr.
Yep. Kate and Eric. Kate and Eric is his middle name.
Emmy is so excited about that. She's like, can I call him Eric? I was like, I think.
Yeah, you can if you want. It's his middle name.
Yeah.
No, but definitely knowing, like, every stoplight I park at, like, oh, that's a good circle. We used to call them good Circle K's.
Yeah.
Like, Circle K's.
Sold alcohol.
Yeah, Circle K's that sold shooters.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, you know, I could just pop in there and grab one real quick. It's like, what am I thinking?
Yeah.
Or family events. We have a huge Mexican family that go crazy.
Yeah.
And I used to, like, live for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, huge parties that you can just get totally messed up and, like, wake up the next day, like, what happened? Like,
yeah.
So when I go to those, I have to, like, change my entire, like, mindset. Like, I just sit, I'm very quiet, you know, I'm not the life of the party anymore. I have to remind myself that. Like, I always thought I was the life of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go to, like, those events and stuff, I just go there. I stay till a certain amount of time. Like, I don't stay till 2 in the morning like I would before.
Yeah.
I leave at, like, 11 when the kids are...
ready.
Yeah, ready. And that's it.
Yeah.
It's not, like, a huge event to me anymore.
Yeah.
It's just...
Because it can't be.
Yeah.
You know what it...
I know what I could do. It like, does. I'd go to the party and drink, and then the next morning,
yeah,
I'm at Circle K, sitting out front, picking up alcohol. Yeah.
Again. Yeah, I remember Eric would say that alcohol was worse because it's everywhere. So you, like, you know, go to these family parties and everyone's taking shots and drinking a beer and, like, there's beer and bottles, like, in the yeah. cooler and all this stuff. He's like, imagine, like, I walk into a party and everyone's, like, putting a needle in their arm.
Exactly.
Like, that's, you know. And yeah. I'll never forget when he told me that, because I was like, I never thought of it that way, but it is so true. Like, how tempting it is to see it. And knowing you can't have it, like, it's...
Yeah, like, you go to a party and your drug of choice, everybody
yeah.
is doing.
Yeah, every... Like, you go to the store, there's an aisle of, yeah. you know? You go to the store, there's not an aisle of fentanyl.
Like in Eric's example, like, you go to Fry's and you walk down an aisle and it's full of heroin.
Yeah.
Pretty much,
yeah.
you know?
So, yeah, it's...
That's why alcohol is, like, the hardest one.
Yeah.
Because it's so socially acceptable.
Yeah.
You know?
It is so acceptable, and I feel like...
And it's the worst drug.
Yeah.
It's so bad for your body, too.
Yeah.
I feel like people don't understand how bad it is for your body.
Yeah.
I mean, my body has been messed up before because of alcohol.
Yeah. Oh, I remember you turning yellow.
I didn't turn, like, full yellow.
You were pretty yellow. I remember. We thought you were, like, dying. Remember? We had to go to the doctor. Eric was like, go to the doctor.
Yeah, I went to the doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were yellow. Pretty sure I have a picture of it somewhere.
Oh, God.
So tell us about your motorcycle accident.
So I don't remember much about that day or even, like, days leading up. All I know from, like, what I've heard is I went to work that day with Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Got home from work, and obviously I've been drinking at work. And then I went to my neighbor's house, and I was like, hey, let's go to the bar down here for... some more drinks. And so mm-hmm. we rode our Harleys over there. And then at some point, one of us came up with the idea to go get drugs. And then we rode to Mesa. And at some point in Mesa, I had, like, shooters in my motorcycle vest. And I, like, took one out, took a shooter. And then he was like, all right, let's head back home. Like, go slow. And I didn't process that, I guess, because
yeah.
we turned out of the parking lot. From what I've heard, we got cut off by a car, and I just smashed right in the back of it. Like, the car pulled in front of us, and right when it got in front of us, I was already, boom, right in the back of it.
Yeah. You don't remember any of it?
No. He said that I tried to swerve when it cut us off, like, to avoid it, but I couldn't swerve in time and just smashed it with the whole left side of my body.
Yeah.
So, I guess, like... I've heard the 911 call. There was a lady who, like, saw it,
mm-hmm.
and my dad played it for me, and she's like, there's a guy who just got hit on his motorcycle, a white truck hit him, and then she's like, he's in the street, and then she, like, pauses, and she's like, I think he's dead.
Oh, my God.
And that, like, sent chills through my body, like, oh, God.
Oh, my God.
And so...
The truck left, right?
Yeah, the truck left the scene. I guess they told my mom that I was, like, dead when I got to the hospital.
Yeah.
And they put me in surgery, but I wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
They thought I wasn't going to make it through surgery.
I think that's when we heard about
yeah.
it, because I think it was your mom that
And so they
to.
Put me in surgery and started trying to put my body back together. And
basically, like, your whole left side was broken.
My whole left side was broken. I broke my neck, my shoulder, all my ribs on my left side, my pelvis, my femur, my fibula, my tibia, my foot, my kneecap. And then the worst part was I... like, hurt my throat,
mm-hmm.
like, it got impacted, so it shrunk. It's called tracheal stenosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, where you have a narrowing of your trachea,
mm-hmm.
or your, yeah, your trachea.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't breathe and we didn't realize that until after I got out of the hospital. Like, once I got home, I couldn't breathe.
Yeah. You're like, what's happening?
Yeah, and then I got a tube put in my throat for a year.
I remember that.
Couldn't walk. I've had 31 surgeries since then, so... I just had a knee replacement, like, the youngest person to get a knee replacement. I walked into physical therapy, he's like, you're 30? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you just had a knee replacement. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So,
it's a reminder every day why I should not drink alcohol.
Yeah, definitely. And how long were you in active addiction before the motorcycle accident?
How long was I in active addiction?
Like, how long were you drinking that time around? How deep into it were you?
Like, really bad, I would say about 4 or 5 years.
So how much were you drinking in a day?
So I would try to space it out. When I knew I was a full-blown alcoholic, I couldn't any longer, because for years it was just by like a bottle after work.
Yeah.
Or even before then, it was drink on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And some on Sunday.
Yeah.
But then it was every night. And then once it became like full-blown alcohol addiction, I couldn't buy bottles anymore.
Yeah.
Because I would drink the whole bottle at 8 a.m. So I would wake up at whatever time work was, like normally around 7, stop at Walgreens, get 3 or 4 shooters, have those gone in about an hour before I even got to the job that day. And then for moving, like, we'd load up the house. After we did our first load, I'd probably stop and get 3 more.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at 7 before noon. And then after we unload, if that was it for the day, I get 4 more for the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And then get home and probably get, I don't know, 8 more. So probably like a bottle a day.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's like so a normal day.
Yeah.
So like on weekends, if we're going like super hard, I could probably drink like a bottle and a half a day.
Yeah.
Really not good for your body.
No, that explains why you were so yellow. It does.
I'm gonna have to see this picture because I don't remember being that yellow.
Oh my gosh. Did the motorcycle accident, well, you did say it kind of changed your perspective on life afterwards when you're sitting in the hospital and you're just like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
You were like, did you ever think like, this is my second chance?
Yeah, I definitely thought it was my second chance. For like the longest time, my perspective was like, okay, like, I'm not even supposed to be here anymore, so all the rest of life is just, like, extra.
Yeah.
It's, like, extra innings or, like, overtime, like, because I'm not even supposed to be alive.
Yeah.
So that was my mindset for a while, and then I guess my mindset now is, like, I got so lucky that I didn't die. I need to take full advantage of this
mm-hmm.
and be, like, the best dad I can, the best husband I can, the best son.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, and not go back to that point where...
Where you were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, living is, like, my sign that, like, okay, we're going to give you a second chance at life to not fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, you have a chance to do this all good again.
Yeah. And not everyone gets that, so.
Yeah. And I would say since the accident, I've been pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I've never gone back into full addiction since the accident. I've had, like, some slip-ups here and there, but I've never gone deep
back.
Down. I've never, like... been like needing alcohol since
right.
the addiction.
So the accident was August of 2021.
October 8th of 2021.
October of 2021. Eric dies March of 2023, and you're sober at this point when he dies?
I was sober the whole time for there.
Until
yes.
up until his death.
Up until his death.
How did his death affect your sobriety? And how did you get through all that?
So when he died, obviously me and you were talking that whole day. Like, we both knew something was wrong. He was supposed to be at my house that day.
Yeah.
He was on his way to Arizona. And, like, he wasn't here.
Yeah.
And so we knew something was wrong. And then when we found out he died, it took me, like, a few days to even process it, I think. Like,
we're
I was
in shock.
So in shock.
Yeah.
And I was, like, surrounded by... family the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, Celeste came over, she didn't leave my side.
Yeah.
You showed up and you were getting the truck and stuff like that. My sister came over, she didn't leave my side. And then the first chance I had that I was alone, I went and picked up alcohol.
Yeah.
It was just like, I didn't know how to be alone. I didn't know how to process what had happened.
Yeah.
I mean, he was my best friend.
Yeah.
Even after he moved, we would talk on the phone. Every day, sometimes like hours a day.
Yeah.
Like, we'd hang out virtually.
Yeah.
He'd put me on FaceTime and just bring me with him for his day.
I remember that.
Like, I'd be at the store with him on his phone. He just set his phone down while he's checking out groceries.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Oh, we're at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Virtually hanging out. So, like, when after a few days of like realizing he's dead and
like oh shit, like, he's not, yeah, like freaked my out. He's not, yeah, doing this.
He's, yeah, not, like he's not, like I haven't talked to him.
Yeah.
Like I freaked out and just went right back into what I knew to,
yeah,
mass pain.
Yeah.
So I went and picked up alcohol, and I think I went on like, I caught it quick because obviously people knew right away.
Yeah.
I wasn't really trying to hide it.
Yeah.
I went to Celeste's like house like completely shit faced.
Yeah.
And so I think it was like a week or two bender, and then I caught it.
Yeah.
And then didn't really go back into full addiction or anything like that.
Yeah. Do you ever talk about, like, so I know you say that, you know, you don't know how to process certain emotions and, like, certain feelings, and that's why you went back to it. But now, if you find yourself in that situation, like, what do you do? Do you talk about it? Do you, like, you know, like, tackle your emotions? Or how do you do it to not get back to that point?
I don't know, really. Like, I've had some traumatic stuff happen since then, and I guess, yeah, talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, my son got basically kidnapped by his mother for 9 months, and that was really traumatic.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking I'm never going to see him again.
Yeah.
I mean, every day being on the phone. I guess the way I dealt with that is being, like, so proactive about the situation and not just giving up.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really have time to go back into like full addiction or,
yeah,
go off the deep end because I was working so hard on getting him back.
Yeah.
Like on the phone with police all day, on the phone, emailing prosecutors.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be fucked up.
Yeah.
All day trying to get your son back.
Yeah.
Because people won't take you seriously if, yeah, you're calling the police like, hey.
Yeah. We'll go get my kid.
So that was like the most traumatic thing that's happened since Eric died was Carson getting kidnapped for 9 months.
Yeah.
And I held it together pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say.
I mean, for the most part, people have said, like, I think my sister said, yeah, we expected you to, like,
yeah,
fall off the deep end.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I feel like that's what happens. Like, unfortunately, because addiction is a way to kind of cope. Like,
yeah.
With your emotions. Like,
it's, you know, the easiest way to cope with it. It's the
easiest way, yeah.
Because, like, if you... you're used to that feeling, and then once you get it, it's like a, whew,
yeah,
you just stop thinking,
yeah,
basically.
So I feel like, yeah, that's fair to say, because even with Eric, like, he always relapsed in, like, really high stressful situations, like, the first time he relapsed was, I was pregnant with Jax. We already had Emmy. I had, like, really bad postpartum depression, so we just weren't, like, not doing good. And I think, you know, my depression rubbed off on him. He was also depressed, working so much, financial stress, like, all, yeah, this stuff. And he just got to a point where he couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
So
I remember that. We were working together, and I was, like, so disappointed. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
He had so many years sober up to that point.
Yeah.
Like, I think I think it was six.
Yeah.
It was either 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And, like, when he started doing it again, when I saw him high for the first time, I, like, couldn't even believe it.
Yeah.
I was like, because I know his face right, yeah, away. Like, the way he acts when he's sober.
You can tell immediately.
Eric is a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
He once told me, I wish I had brown eyes.
Yeah. He used to tell me that all the
time. Because these blue eyes give it away right away.
Yeah. But I didn't know, because I've never been around any sort of drug or anyone that was high.
Right.
And you didn't tell me.
Yeah, I know.
He
would have killed me.
I almost killed you. Do you remember? I went, yes, over to your house. I was, like, trying to fight you because, yes, I was like, how the fuck could you not tell me that?
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
I remember that. And then you were like, I just don't know how you didn't notice. Like, it's so, and I'm like, I haven't. Like, now I notice, you know, like, afterwards it was like, oh my God, yeah, immediately. Like, he could just call you on the phone and be high.
You can hear his voice.
Yeah.
His voice gets more scraggly and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was, like, so disappointing. Like, I was, like, because I put a lot of effort into making sure that he never did drugs again.
Yeah.
And it was, like, the first high tense situation.
And like the first chance he got, because I left.
Yeah, you left. You're out of town. And he, like, blamed it on me, too, because he had tried calling me the day he relapsed. Mm-hmm. And I was busy or something. I didn't answer. And then an hour later, he shows up at the house, because we lived on the same street.
Yeah.
And so I walked over there, and he was high. And he's like, I tried calling you, but you didn't answer. And he'd give you, like, a sad story, like, you have no time for Eric.
Yeah.
And I was just looked at him, and I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I, like, couldn't even believe it.
Yeah.
And that was the start of years of relapse on and off, sober.
On and off.
Yeah, he would go back and forth.
I feel like that was the beginning of the end. Because I feel like, first of all, I didn't understand addiction. So in the beginning I was like so angry and why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to our kids? Like, what the fuck? Like, we're not good enough. And then I think once I started to understand it, it made it easier, but it was always like in the back of my mind, obviously, you know, and I feel like it made me go crazy. Like, you would even make comments, like, and all Eric's friends would make comments about how I was like a crazy wife. Cause he would like, I remember one time he wanted to go golfing with you and Dom, and you guys like both came in like begging me, and I was like, absolutely not. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
And he was like, come on. Like, I think it's cause he had just been clean for like a month or 2 months. So, you guys like kept coming into the house, and you were like, he's going to be with me the whole time. I was like, absolutely not. Like, he can't go golfing unless I go with you guys. Like, can I, like, let me go? And Eric's like, no, I don't want you to go. And then he was like, my wife is just crazy. You don't remember that big fight? Yeah.
I remember him calling you crazy a lot, though.
Yeah, all the time.
I mean,
I was.
At times, yes. We'd pull into a gas station from working, and you would be like, immediately call, why'd you pull in a gas station?
Yep, or like, I'd show up.
Or yeah, you like show up places, I'd be like, man.
Yeah.
But you kind of had to.
Yeah. I remember he told me the last time around when we were living in California, and this was after 4th of July, remember? That was like, we went with Jana and Gary to Dana Point.
Oh, yeah.
And he was sober, one day sober on the 4th of July, because he went through the whole detox and all that. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And when we went back home, he was craving, like, he was just trying to make every excuse in the book, like, oh, I have this desk in the back of my trailer, like, I'm gonna go drop it off at Goodwill or something like that. And I was like, no, like, I'll go with you. And he's like, no, never mind. Like, I'll just do it later. So he waited until the kids were napping. And he was like, all right, I'm going to go do that real quick. Like, knowing that I can't leave my kids there.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm just going to go to Goodwill and, like, drop it off. And I was like, okay. So he goes to Goodwill. I had his location. I was so crazy to the point where, do you remember he switched from Apple to Android?
Yeah.
Because I would always...
Yeah, he switched to an Android phone because you couldn't track him.
Because I couldn't track him, but then he eventually went back to an Apple. So I track him, or I'm looking at his location, and he is at Goodwill, but he's not moving. And I was like, this, like, something's not right. Like, he's not moving. Like, it doesn't fucking take that long to drop a desk off.
Yeah.
I literally get in my car, because Goodwill was across the street from my parents' house, find his phone in a bush. He's not even there. His phone's in a bush.
Wow.
Yeah. And I go to the gas station, like, where I know he, like, met up with whoever, like, the guy that he'd get it from. And the look on his face when he saw me, they're like, bitch, you're crazy. Like, why? How did you?
You have to be pretty crazy to, like, put your phone in a bush, too.
Yeah, I know. And I remember I made him leave his truck there. I was like, you're driving home with me. We're not, like, you are not leaving my side again for, like... And then on the way home, he's like, honestly, if you weren't as crazy as you are, I would have been dead by now. He's like, I know I always say you're crazy and this and that. He's like, but thank you, because if you weren't that crazy, like, I don't even think I'd be here anymore.
So he was at the gas station to buy drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got there before the dealer got there. And he was like, okay, let's go, let's go. And because before that, did he tell you when I found him at his dealer's house and I'm like trying to fight the dealer and
no.
his grandma? Oh, I was crazy.
You tried to fight the dealer's grandma?
Oh, yeah. Because she wouldn't let me in her house. And Eric, like, shut off his location at this point. And I'm like so crazy to like a couple months before that, he was like getting home from a job from here, from Arizona, back to my parents' house. And he like drove past my parents' house to this other neighborhood. And like I remember checking his location. And then like when he got home, I asked him, I was like, why did you drive over there and then like come back here? Like when you just passed the house? He's like, oh, because there's a smoke shop there and I like got a vape or whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's made up some lie. And I was like, okay. So then a couple weeks or a month or something passed by and he shuts his phone off. He shuts off his location because he's high and I'm like trying to get a hold of him. And I like go so fucking crazy. I'm like, I need to go find him. I was like, I'm going to go through that neighborhood. I literally went through that neighborhood street by street driving the whole entire neighborhood. And I didn't find him, and I'm like leaving the neighborhood, and I'm like, whatever, I like can't, I don't know where he is. I'm leaving the neighborhood, and I see his trailer parked outside of this house, and I like go, I park the truck, I'm banging on the garage door. I was like, I know you're in there, I called the police, like get the fuck out here. And he like comes out running and he picks me up. Emmy's in the car with me because I don't know why, where we were. And I like go back and I like tell a guy to come outside. And he's like, no, I'm so sorry, don't call the cops. Like something about my grandma's an immigrant or something.
The guy was saying that?
Yeah.
The drug
and man? I was like, then come out here. Like I was like, I want to talk to your grandma. I'm like trying to break the window and the door. And
yeah, Eric's tell, like, tell the grandma the what he's doing out there.
Yeah. I was like, I want to see your grandma and like talk to her. And Eric was like, don't do this to her. Like it's not her fault. They're going to deport her and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't care. Like I don't care about these people. Like you're, you know, I was like, it's your fault. You're here. Like why are you here?
Yeah.
Oh man, he had to like care. He kept carrying me back and forth to the car because I kept going and like trying to break into the door. And
was that the same dealer that sold him the last
same
drugs?
Same dealer.
We yep. know where you live.
Oh, I know where you live. Yeah.
We know where
have
you
your
live.
Your address, phone number, all that good.
We got
stuff.
Your social security number, social everything, security. Homie.
Oh my god. Yeah. So I was crazy, but. I feel like I had to be, like, what?
Yeah.
Was I just going to sit back?
I mean, like he said, you being crazy kept him alive.
Yeah.
I mean, even before he met you, I was kind of like that crazy too, though, with him. Like, I came home to the apartment one night, and we got in a fight over something, like something stupid or something. He's like, I got to go. And he made, like, some excuse where he had to go pick something up or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, I'll go with you.
Yeah, same.
And so he got, like, mad. And then we get into his truck, and he, like, just started driving around. And he, like, realized, like, I don't know if where he was, like, gonna going to still try to do whatever he was going to do with me.
Yeah.
And then he realized it's not a good idea. So we, like, drove around for 5 minutes, and they drove back to the apartment complex. Like,
yeah.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah, that happened to us all the time. Like, we'd be fighting, but he'd want to leave. And I'm like, okay, like, hold on. Let me load the kids. Like, we're going together.
Yep.
He'd be like, never mind. I'm not going.
Yeah.
Or, like, I just do, like, crazy stuff. Like, I remember for the longest time, like, when he was going to the bathroom, even if he was taking a shit, like, he had a shit with the door open because I was so fucking crazy. I was like, you're not.
Yeah.
Like, I will take the knobs off of the door.
Yeah. Going in bathrooms is not a good thing when you're doing heroin or coke.
So,
can never be trusted in bathrooms.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, drugs make you do crazy things.
I mean, even with alcohol, I've snuck in the bathrooms to take shooters before.
Yeah.
You can't, bathroom's the place.
You can't blame us for, you know, like, just wanting to protect you or us, you know, like, I don't know. But
it was a good crazy.
Yeah. It was a good crazy. But, yeah, you guys talked shit about me. I remember that. So what would you say to someone struggling with addiction right now?
What would I say to someone struggling with addiction? I would say that you need to seek help before you get to, like, another rock bottom. Like, mm-hmm. if you've already hit your rock bottom and you're still thinking you can get high or drunk or whatever, get help before you hit another rock bottom. Because there's always another, like, you think your lowest rock bottom is right now. Just keep drinking, just keep
just
doing drugs,
wait.
Because wait, there's another one.
It's gonna
I'm
get
here
worse.
To tell you, I've hit 5 or 6 rock bottoms. Like, I thought I hit rock bottom when I was 19. Nope. So
no.
That's what I would say is, like, you really have no clue how far you can go. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's people on the streets begging for money for,
yeah.
I mean, do you think they've hit rock bottom before that? Probably.
Yeah. And they probably say, like, how did I get here? Like,
so
how did I
get my advice here? Would be, get help before it's too late.
Yeah.
Like, you end up dead or homeless or in prison for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like in my motorcycle accident, when I woke up and I said, did I kill anybody? Imagine if I had. Imagine if I was driving a car.
Right.
I mean, throw my whole life away over one decision.
Yep.
And I've met people like that in prison. I've met people who have hit people drunk and killed them.
Yeah.
And they just didn't stop in time. That's really their rock bottom.
And that's it. They're fucked.
I met someone who killed their best friend. He was driving a car drunk with his best friend.
Yeah.
And woke up in the hospital like I did, except he was in a car and his best friend was dead. So when he woke up and asked that question, it was, did I kill anybody? And the person was like, yeah, you killed your best friend.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Ugh. I would say stop before you cause more damage and go to more rock bottoms.
Yeah. I read something yesterday or the other day, and it said there's only, or two ways to get out of addiction. You recover or you die. And
yeah.
I was like, damn, that's, I mean, it is true, but like, I feel like
recovery is so hard too.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot. I heard a guy taught the opioid class in prison. I went to classes in prison. I took the opioid class just because I was interested. Like, it's affected my life.
Yeah.
You know, my best friend died from it. I've had other friends die from it, too.
Yeah.
And the guy teaching the class, he said something that really stuck with me that, like, I've used, too. He said, I think I 100% have another relapse in me, but I don't have another recovery in me. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, think about that.
Yeah.
The amount of work it takes to recover versus the amount of work it takes to relapse.
Yeah.
It's not even comparable. No. It's so easy to relapse, but it's so hard to recover.
Yeah. The recovery, oh my God.
Yeah, people don't know.
People don't know.
They have no clue.
They don't even understand.
Like, even my dad still, I think you had a conversation with him too, and they just don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, do you know how hard it is to recover, especially once you've gone years into this?
Yeah.
Once you've been like me or Eric or people that have gone years in addiction, you have no clue how hard it is.
No.
That's like part of your life.
It's so bad to the point where I feel like so many people, and I mean, I heard Eric say this all the time too, like, I'd rather die than go through another detox.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I mean, I've obviously never felt it, but I saw him do it multiple times, and it's just so crazy seeing the control that has over your body. Like, and I would tell Eric that all the time. I'm like, it like breaks my heart to know you're like, you know, you're like this big, like strong man. And then I see you at this point and I'm like, man, that did that to you. Like
that tiny little pill
does this to you. And he's out like for days, like trying to detox. And it's like,
it's crazy.
It's sad.
That tiny little pill has that much control over this big man who can do anything.
Yeah.
Like, he can rebuild houses, but he can't control a little tiny pill.
Yeah. And that was like one of the, I just couldn't wrap my mind around that. And I remember the first time we went through his detox, I didn't know, like, obviously I didn't know anything about that then. And he had told me, he was like, oh, he like kind of warned me. He was like, it's going to take a few days and this happens and that happens. And, you know, like, I'm going to be miserable and be throwing up and all this stuff. And so he got sick for like one day. And then I was like, oh, he was like, okay, like, I'm better now. And I was like, that's it? He was like, yeah, that's it. I'm like clean. And I was like, that wasn't even like 24 hours, but I was so naive. So I like believed it. He'd never stopped. Yeah.
He never,
and this was the first time around. And then, so he like went for, I think it was like another month. Remember we got in that car accident, and that's when I was like, something's wrong. And that's when I actually found the heroin in his truck. And I was like, you told me that you were done.
Yeah.
And
that's how crazy addiction is.
Yeah.
He faked a detox.
Yeah.
To keep going. Make you think, oh, I've detoxed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is crazy because I remember when I found the heroin too, I like grabbed it and the way he reacted, cause I was like, I'm going to throw it away or like flush it down the toilet. It was like, his life was over.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot do that. Like, please let me smoke it one more time. Like, begging me on his knees. Like, please don't do this. Like, yeah. Let me just hit it one more time. I have to know it's my last time. Like, all this stuff. And it's, like, just the power. It's... people don't understand.
Yeah, but, they really don't.
Yeah. Like, they...
I had never really seen... like, because I've never done heroin. I've never done meth. I've never done, like, hard drugs, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I've dabbled in, like, coke here and there, but I've never... like, really been a
full-blown addiction.
Never been into drugs, really. Never tried heroin, never tried meth, nothing like that. So I never have really seen detoxing from it. And this last time, before I went to prison, I was in the county jail waiting to go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that this fentanyl stuff has changed the game of jail, I mean, it used to be like, we're tough, you know. Yeah. You have your races separated.
Yeah.
Now it's like... everybody's for themselves. We're all junkies. We're all just gonna lay here and cry.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is crazy.
It's sad.
I mean, I was in a cell with six other guys, and I was the only one not withdrawing. And the amount of pain these guys are going through, they are screaming, begging, like begging God to drop a pill on them.
Yeah.
There was this one kid in there like, please, someone give me a blue, please.
Yeah.
Like all night long.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, this stuff is crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I never tried those drugs, because I would be like Eric. I'd either be dead or...
yeah.
I mean, I'm so glad I never tried those drugs, because what I've seen them, the power they have, it's insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I remember, like, during his detoxes, too, like, there were some points where I was, like, afraid... because I, like, wouldn't let him go, like, you know, wherever he wanted to go. And I'm like, man, like, you just, the control it has over you, like, you're, like, willing to do whatever to go out and get it, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh, but yeah, that was hard, like, seeing him just cry.
So you've seen the detox, you know how bad it is.
I have seen the detox. I have seen it quite a few times, and it's so sad. Like, it's so sad. It's probably the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you're so helpless. And this person is so helpless, and they're just, like, crying and, like, begging for, you know, everything. Like, the shakes, they're sweating, throwing up, puking, shitting themselves. Like, it's so bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. And it's, like, you just want to, like, shake them. Be like, get out of it, because that's not your person. Like, this is not you, and you're seeing them go through all this pain, and you literally can't do anything about it, but just, here's some Gatorade.
Yeah.
Like, here's some water.
Yeah, the last time I was in the county jail, it was insane to see how much it's changed because of the fentanyl epidemic.
Yeah. Yep.
They, like, baby them. No, the guards, like, baby them. Like, oh, like, here's Gatorade. I was like, they never used to give us anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, detoxing from alcohol, that's different?
I would say it's different, but it's also pretty darn bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't, like, I don't know how it's different, because I've never...
right.
I've never detoxed from, like, heroin or anything, but from my experience, detoxing from alcohol is really bad.
Yeah.
You'll be laying in bed, and your body, like, aches,
mm-hmm.
and you're shaking really bad. You still feel the hot, cold.
Yeah.
I remember one time, and they say detoxing from alcohol is like you can die from it.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the only one I think you could, well, I mean, you could die from any detox, but if you do that one unmedicated.
Yeah. And so when I lived at the house next to you guys, I was going to detox by myself, and I was laying in my room about to, like, trying to sleep. And I remember thinking, like, if I fall asleep right now, I'm going to die in my sleep.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm in so much pain, and I felt like my body was shutting down.
Yeah.
And you're puking constantly. You can't eat. You're throwing up, like, the yellow stomach acid.
Yeah, because you don't have anything left.
It's bad.
Yeah, so bad.
I don't know if it's worse than fentanyl.
Yeah.
Withdrawal, but it's pretty darn bad.
I feel like any withdrawal, is, like, super, just don't want to do it.
Yeah. I'm lucky I haven't had to do any withdrawal since the accident. I was in a coma.
Oh, for that withdrawal.
Yeah. That's so I woke up and I was already perfect.
Yeah.
Like, no withdrawals.
Yeah.
So I think my mom told them, like, when I...
that you were an alcoholic.
Yeah, that I was an alcoholic. Yeah. I'm not withdrawals.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
whatever they did, they did it good, because when I woke up, I
you didn't feel it.
Didn't
so.
Feel nothing, though.
No. Oh, my God.
Just the broken bones.
Yeah. Oh, that's enough. This is my last question for you. What keeps you going just for today?
What keeps me going just for today is definitely my family, I would say. I have the strongest family. Celeste, my fiance, she is absolutely amazing. Me and her have the best relationship, like, and I almost threw it away.
Yeah.
Because of alcohol, like,
yeah.
Almost lost her.
Yeah.
And if that would have happened, that would have been terrible.
Yeah, another rock bottom.
Another rock bottom. but she's, like, the strongest woman. She's amazing stepmom. So our relationship keeps me going. My bond and connection with my son. I have the best son in the world. Yeah. He keeps me going. And then the rest of my family, you. I mean, we come over here and hang out with you and your family every weekend almost.
Yeah, all the time.
My sister, I have the best relationship with my sister,
yeah.
Which I would say is as good as it is today because I got sober.
Yeah.
Almost threw that one away too.
Yep.
Me and my dad, we have an extremely close bond.
Yeah.
My mom... I would say that's, like, what keeps me going.
Yeah.
Like, the relationships I've repaired with my family and extended family.
Everything that was once ruined.
Yeah, like, didn't even care about it.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
And now...
Like, before, you know. When I was in addiction, like, I could care less if I didn't see my dad or my yeah. sister for months.
Yeah, because you don't care about anything but...
Yeah, like, I didn't want to see them.
Yeah.
Now I see my sister and my dad almost every day.
Yeah.
Like, that's yeah. what keeps me going is the amazing connection and bond I have with my family and
yeah.
you guys and Emmy. And that's what plays, like, a huge reminder of Eric. And
yeah.
I still get to see Eric, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, I see his kids and watch his kids, and they all... Jax looks...
Just like him. Acts
just like him. So I still yeah. feel like I have Eric in my life, too, and...
Yeah.
That's what keeps me going.
Well, we do love a supportive family, and I feel like we both got pretty lucky in that.
We got lucky. We have a good family.
Department. So, yeah. Well, thank you for coming on here and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Is there anything else you'd like us to know?
That's it.
All right. That's it. We'll have you back on. All right, guys. Well, that's it for today's episode. Thank you again for sharing your story with us. And if this story resonated with you, please share it with someone who you think might need to hear it. And if you want to continue to be a part of these conversations, don't forget to subscribe. I will see you guys all next time. And don't forget, just for today, keep going.